This is the podcast from JNS Pediatrics. This is the August 15th, 2014 podcast from JNS Pediatrics. My name is Natalie Pincham, and I will be reading summaries of articles on computed tomography, oncology, and epilepsy published today. Brain metastases in patients diagnosed with a solid primary cancer during childhood. Experience from a single referral cancer center. A clinical article by Dima Suki and colleagues. In adults, solid cancers arising outside the brain frequently spread to it, a condition referred to as brain metastasis. Historically, brain metastasis was thought to be rare in children. However, it has recently been claimed that brain metastasis in children has become more frequent. This reported increase has been linked to improvement in detection methods and to advances in primary cancer treatment that allow children to survive longer, giving more time for cancerous spread to the brain. The authors of this study investigated the notion of increased frequency of brain metastasis in pediatric patients based on the records of the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center. They reviewed the records of pediatric patients from 1990 to 2012 and found nearly 4,000 cases involving children with solid primary cancers outside the brain, yet only 54 of these children, 1.4%, had brain metastases. This finding would seem to argue against an increase in frequency. The most common type of primary tumor spreading to the brain was sarcoma, accounting for about 54% of cases of brain metastases. In most of these cases, the primary tumors were osteosarcomas. Malignant melanoma was the second most common type of primary tumor in patients with brain metastasis, and accounted for about 15% of cases. The authors present extensive data on the cases from their institutional registry, including primary cancer sites, tumor histology, number and location of brain metastases, sites of extracranial metastases, treatments, and outcomes. They also provide tables summarizing details of case series previously reported in the literature. They note that although the actual number of cases may not be increasing, the prognosis after the diagnosis of a brain metastasis remains poor regardless of the management strategy. Estimation of normal computed tomography measurements for the upper cervical spine in the pediatric age group. A clinical article by Shoban Vakrajani and co-authors. Establishment of computed tomography-based protocols will likely decrease the time required to accomplish clearance and reduce the number of missed injuries. This study used high-resolution reconstructed CT scans to define a range of normative CT measurements in children. The mean Bayesian dental interval was 7.28 millimeters. This value is used to identify occipito-atlantal dislocation. The upper limit suggested in this study is smaller than the value currently used. The mean atlantodental interval was 2.25 millimeters. The normal atlantodental value currently used is likely a valid indicator of instability. For the lateral mass interval, which is used in diagnosing vertical C1 to C2 distraction injuries, the mean distance was 2.91 millimeters. The upper limit, according to the author's study, may be larger than previous literature suggests. Soft tissue swelling is an indirect indicator of significant trauma. The mean soft tissue width was 4.45 millimeters, which is close to previously accepted values. In the author's study, the mean craniocervical interval was 2.38 millimeters. 4 millimeters is a useful discriminator for atlanto-occipital dissociation. In the current study, the mean posterior atlantodental interval was 18.3 millimeters. Clinicians may be able to tolerate a higher canal diameter. Linear regression analysis demonstrated statistically significant age effects for the posterior atlantodental interval, the Bayesian dental interval, and the craniocervical interval, and significant sex effects for the craniocervical interval and the posterior atlantodental interval. Epilepsy surgery failure in children, a quantitative and qualitative analysis, a clinical article by Dario Englot and co-workers. While most studies of pediatric epilepsy surgery focus on predictors of postoperative seizure outcome, these factors often cannot be modified, leaving the reasons for surgical failure unclear. In this paper, the authors performed a retrospective cohort study of children and adolescents who received focal resective surgery for pharmacoresistant epilepsy. The authors conducted both quantitative and qualitative analyses of factors associated with persistent postoperative seizures. 110 patients were reviewed, ranging in age from 6 months to 19 years at the time of surgery, who underwent 115 resections. After a mean follow-up of 3 years, 76% of patients were free of disabling seizures, achieving an Engel Class 1 outcome. Seizure freedom was predicted by temporal lobe surgery compared with extratemporal resection, tumor or mesial temporal sclerosis compared with cortical dysplasia or other pathologies, and by a lower preoperative seizure frequency. Factors associated with persistent seizures included residual epileptogenic tissue adjacent to the resection cavity in 40% of cases, an additional epileptogenic zone distant from the resection cavity in 32% of cases, and the presence of a hemispheric epilepsy syndrome in 28% of surgeries. While seizure outcomes may be improved with high-resolution neuroimaging and invasive electrographic studies, a more aggressive resection should be considered in certain patients. Thank you for listening. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously. Comments on this podcast can be sent to JNSPodcast@thejns.org. Thank you.